done. Because otherwise I forget. I'm terrible for remembering that. But yeah, Tour de France. We are on stage five. It's stage five, isn't it?
Four? It's stage five, yeah.
Stage five.
No, it's, stage,
yeah. It's the first one, isn't it, where we've got a lot. I didn't realize how many cobbles are in this sector today as well. Like, you've got the Arenberg, which is, I don't know how many years it is since that's been in the Tour de France, but there's a lot of cobbles. It's basically a mini Roubaix day, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not, but it's not too far back when they had the last time the Paris-Roubaix stage. I think Degenkolb won it, so
yeah.
I remember that one.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if there was another one in between, but should be an exciting day on the bike for them.
Wasn't it the Degenkolb one? Wasn't it like his, what a, I think his first or one of his first wins since he had that horrible
had that crash? Yeah, he had this horrible crash in Mallorca.
Yeah.
And that was his first proper win after that. And I mean, to win that stage is like nearly as good as winning Paris-Roubaix, I think. And
I remember
his comeback. So it was very important for him, I think.
I remember him being very emotional at the end, and like, I'm no denying it at all. I'm a massive Mark Cavendish fan. I'm half Manx. I'm quite
so heartbroken.
Heartbroken. Genuinely, my fantasy Tour de France team name is Wish Cav Was Racing. That's not even a joke.
Yeah.
But I remember at the end of that stage, with the one which Degenkolb won, Cav being, I think, one of the first riders to come up to him and like gave him a massive hug. Just really.
Yeah. I mean, Cav raced in Germany for a long while. I'm not sure if they were. I mean, they should have been on the same team at High Road.
Yeah.
I think. But yeah.
Yeah.
I think they know each other for a pretty long time.
So we've cocked up this recording of this podcast episode. We've just admitted that because we're probably missing one of the most exciting stages in the Tour de France this year. So, sorry. but on the flip side, on the exciting side of it, I've actually been quite interested in doing a podcast with... I don't have a German accent, so I'm going to butcher the name.
It's fine.
Schwalbe?
Just try it.
Schwalbe?
Schwalbe, yeah. But it's swallow. So,
Is that what it translates to? Swallow?
Yeah. It is the original name was Swallow, but then it was changed to Schwalbe, I think, 50 years back, 40 years back. Yeah.
A bit before our time.
No, it's 50 years back. Yeah, 50 years back. Yeah.
Wow. So how long has Schwalbe been going for now? As a brand?
As a brand, it's nearly 50 years Schwalbe.
Yeah.
We have our big celebration next year. Next year will also be the 40th year of the Schwalbe Marathon.
Yeah.
Which is the most important tire that we have, our touring tire, the flatless tire that it became later on with the Marathon Plus.
Mm-hmm.
And the company exists for way longer. I think it's nearly 100 years old. I'm not sure. At first, it was just a trade company. Mm-hmm. And then 60 years ago, they focused on cycling products. And then this corporation began to import high-quality cycling tires. That was from Korea at that time. And we still work with the same company. So Schwalbe is actually a joint venture of a German company, this trade company that it was at first.
Mm.
And the Korean company that is still producing the tires and is our development partner as well. So actually it's a German-Korean thing, not only German, but we look back on a, I think, 60-year-long relationship with this Korean company.
That's really cool. And how long have you been working there now, Jacob?
I'm part of the product management for 2.5 years now. I just started before COVID. It was quite surprising to be in home office after 6 weeks of working there. But I've been affiliated with the brand for a very long time. So I've been working in the lab as a student.
Cool.
That was 8 years ago for some time. And then even before, I was one of their test riders. So yeah. Since I live quite close by to the company and there was some connection to the now senior product management, I've been part of the Schwalbe brand for, I don't know, I think since I was a junior, so 20 That's years. Cool. So,
It's funny because I started, I guess, cycling a bit more seriously in 2016, I think. So my background's not cycling. My background is being a fat, lazy person. That was what I did. I was a fat, lazy person. I worked in architecture, got to travel around the world, which was really cool. I got to do some incredible things and work on some really cool projects. But I gained a load of weight, really struggled with depression, and one day just turned around and quit. And I started sort of cycling. Well, I used to play rugby at the same time, and I used to play at a relatively high level, but had quite a bad injury. And my physio recommended that I cycle as a way of recovering from that low impact. So I think it's like a really common story. You hear it from loads of people who've played football, rugby, American football, those kind of sports, hearing that actually doing something that's very low impact is great for that. And I used to ride a bike as a kid, like everyone did. And it kind of became the thing for me when I was at uni because it was free. I had a bright red Specialized Allee that was two sizes big too for me. I hated it. Uh-huh. It's too big for me. And I don't really like the color red. But then when I started taking cycling a bit more seriously, at the time, as I say, I think 2016 or so, I've kind of been like, oh, tubeless. Sounds cool. Literally, I was like, I like the sound of that. It makes a lot of sense to me. But there wasn't really any brands apart from Schwalbe doing tubeless tires in the roadside.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
So,
there have been other companies trying to boost tubeless even before.
Yeah.
I think Hutchinson was one of the first, maybe some others. But we were the first ones to really go all in. I mean, we even ditched the tubular tires very early on. So we don't produce any tubular tires anymore for quite a while now. We embraced it fully. I think it's been a journey of 9 years now, eight or 9 years. And we fully believe in road tubeless. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was the first like charity challenge I did, which was riding around Richmond Park in London for 24 hours. And the wheels I had then were set up with, I think it was the one. I don't think the pro ones were available then. I'm not sure. I think it was the ones. And it just worked. This makes complete sense. It works. It's actually quite easy to set up. And I didn't really have any, I didn't really have any issues with it. And I always used to hate it when I was going on a group ride and get a puncture, and you get that pressure from everyone staring at you, watching you changing in the tube. I hated it. I really hated it because then the people are like judging you and how quickly you do it and all that sort of stuff. But then in contrast, now with a tubeless setup, I have one of the Dynaplug things.
Yeah.
And that to me is the best tubeless repair kit I've ever used. It's just like, boop. Done. There you go. Spin the wheel.
It's fine. Yeah.
It really is that easy.
It came a really long way. I think 8 years ago, not a lot of rims were in the market that worked well. And over the past years, other tire companies, but also rim manufacturers, they learned a lot. And it was quite a hard process, I think, for a lot of people. Or a lot of companies to find the perfect dimensions. But now that the ETRTO, so the European Commission, is having a standard, it's working really, really well. The system is getting where it should have been a long time ago, but now that everyone came together and agreed on a standard, it's getting easier and easier from year to year. You see that the rim designs are getting better. At first, for example, it was a problem that the rims were too narrow.
Yeah.
And so having the first setup tubeless was always pretty hard because the rim bead wouldn't lock in, like the tire wouldn't pop out, stuff like that. A lot of development came from the rim, the manufacturers, but also the tires, of course, now have a much better standard than like 8 years ago. So
and
it's
gotten
easier and easier.
Yeah, I guess from your perspective, it's got easier as the technology's advanced. And now, as we're seeing it being embraced in the Tour de France as well, there are teams that I think it first kind of came in, actually, maybe more on the time trialing side. But we're seeing more and more teams who are going down the route of running tubeless. I think Ineos are this year. And I think any specialized sponsored team is tubeless this year. Ironically, they were on inner tubes last year. It's just specialized doing specialized things, isn't it?
I mean, you might have read the story why they did that, but it was quite interesting.
Yeah. I
think everyone can read up on that. But yeah, we see the embrace for World Tour teams. The situation was completely different 2 years ago, where most of the teams were still running tubulars, and now the word spread, okay, tubeless is faster, it is reliable, you have the ability to run your tire even if it had a puncture, and you can still make a few meters until your team car reaches you and stuff like that. It's stuff that was important to them. But yeah, we went a different route. So we saw very early on that these water teams are not committed in switching. We had, I think, up to 5 teams at some point. So we put a lot of effort in, also for our team liaison manager to getting feedback from them. But, you know, cycling is very traditional, at least road cycling is. And so we said, okay, we take a different approach. And now we focus on triathlon a lot. And actually there we're very successful. We have a lot of great athletes, Laura Phillips, Patrick Lange, Sebastian Kienle, you name a pro, it's basically, they're basically all sponsored by Swive, and that's because they're much more open to technologies like that. And at one point, everyone wanted to ride for us, which is great and a great success. And now we see that on the road side, the development gets there, that they are going to run 100% tubeless, maybe in the future. They're not there yet. I think at some mountain stages, they're still looking for very light rims. It's sometimes a problem that if you have a certain wheel sponsor, that the wheels are not light enough if they are tubeless compatible and stuff like that. So I think in the next 2 or 3 years, most of the teams will be running tubeless entirely.
And I guess the advancement of disc brake road bikes as well has helped, because allowing you for the wider rims, I'd imagine that's probably helped with it as well, because I mean, we're seeing that road tires are getting wider and wider. The newer models of bikes, whether it's the really racy versions, have got clearance for 30 mil tires, at least generally now. That seems to be quite standard, if not bigger. So I'm a big believer that having a bigger volume tire is no slower. It's more comfortable.
And that's generally true. I mean, the rolling resistance in theory gets lower the wider you go in the tire width. Maybe that's not as intuitive, or that's not what the marketing said 20 years ago, but it's true. But yeah, you gain a lot of comfort, a lot of grips, or at least for beginner riders as well, you have a lot of confidence going into corners. That's really great. And of course, you have a slight disadvantage in weight, but seeing that weight is not top priority, if you look at high performance, it's always the aerodynamics that make more of a difference. I think people are willing to sacrifice a little in weight, but gain those other advantages in rolling resistance, grip. Also, like for triathletes, for example, it was a big deal to have a bigger rear tire, just to have more comfort and being able to run faster in the end. So in our last iteration of the Pro One, our high-end road bike tire, we focused a lot on suppleness.
Mm-hmm.
And the feedback was that it makes a huge difference to have a tire that gives you a lot of comfort as well.
I agree.
So this is things you learn on the way that not only like weight is important, but all these other factors are important as well.
Especially definitely for something that's an Ironman related or ultra distance related in any sort of sense of the word. So when I've done 24-hour time trials, I've done 28 Pro One TT on the rear and a 25 I think on the front, and like the only I would my preference would be to go 28 but actually doing wind tunnel testing on it, and just because of the particular bike, the rims and the bike combination, it actually worked out faster to go narrower on the front, wider on the back, and was so much significantly more comfortable. Like I was quite surprised at the difference. A time trial bike for 24 hours is not comfortable, so any kind of benefit you can get is an absolute savior. You know, there's nothing you can do to make a 24-hour TT pretty. It's grim. It's really grim.
Yeah, that's also something that the manufacturers are working on, like adjusting the frame and also the shape of the wheels to be aerodynamic with a 28-millimeter front tire as well. That's something that we see a lot now, especially if you look at hookless designs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a new thing that a lot of manufacturers go for, hookless rim design. Thankfully, we are in a lucky situation that all our tubeless tires can be run on those hookless rims. So we did our homework very early on. And now you have rims in the market that work great with 28-millimeter tires in the front, and then even more advantages. Those wheels are very light, but you have very good aerodynamics due to these specific shapes and a lot of comfort. So there's a lot of development going on still, which is, I think, very great.
Yeah, I think we're in a... There's a fly bug in my face. I think we're in this very interesting point in cycling where, you know, we've had... The going from rim to disc brake for a lot of people was a big... that was a big jump. For me, when I sort of started, I guess, taking cycling a bit more seriously in 2016, I had a disc brake road bike. I was like, I was like, that makes complete sense to me. It stops. Cool. Like, I didn't even question it. But there was such a resistance to it, especially from, the pro peloton for quite a long time. And then I always... I think for some people I know, the changing point was when Cervelo bought out the previous generation R5, and the disc brake version was lighter than the rim brake version. I definitely cottoned onto that. And I mainly cottoned onto it because when they released that bike, it had this like camo black and white paint job, and I thought it was amazing.
Yeah, it looked great.
Yeah. And so I think, now it's very much become that, the disc brake thing is kind of the way that it's normal now. I think most teams...
If you look at bikes now that are rim brake versions, you look at them and think like something's wrong. Like I had that the other day when I looked at a bike that still had rim brakes, and I was like, something's off. And like 2 years back, you would think like, oh, how ugly is that disc brake? But okay, it works, so I will use disc brakes, but it looks funny. And now you look at bikes and it's the other way around. It's just like, already visually, like the brain already adapted and things like, okay, now it's fine, so it's all the time. People need to get used to it, basically. So
and I think as well with the advancement in gravel, which is definitely something I think Phil we're going to end up talking about quite a bit, because especially with the Unbound 200 win on the new G1 RS. Like, that's pretty mega.
Yeah.
Pretty
that
cool.
That was a mega day. Like, not only that, but like, we won the XL as well. Maybe you've seen that. The 315 mile edition was won by Cynthia Frazier.
Yeah.
And then the men's category was second place.
Yeah.
Right of us as well. It was a great day. We had five people in the top 20 at Unbound 200, so the main event. We had a third place in Unbound 100. So it was, we're still over the moon. Like, we planned on launching that tire at that day.
Mm.
And of course, it's always a high risk to launch a product at a specific event, and then you like want to back it up with great results. But we would never have thought that this would all come together. So it was a fantastic ride by Eva. It was Slick who won the race, but also from all the other riders that were on our tires. So.
It's been on my, that event has been on my radar for a few years. It just looks so good.
Well, it's brutal, I guess. So,
that's probably why it appeals to me.
Probably very.
But I
very
have,
big achievement.
Yeah, definitely. And I've got a set of I have a Cervelo Espero 5, and I've just literally yesterday I had a new set of wheels arrive for it, which is a British brand called Parkours, who've just released an updated version of their gravel wheel called the Alta, and it's even wider than the previous version. I think the external measurement is like 31 mil, something like that. Big wide wheel. And I literally yesterday set it up. I'm looking at it, it's on the other side of this laptop, basically. I set it up with the G1 RS, and I've not ridden it yet, but it looks cool. It looks great. It looks fantastic. And the tread pattern is a very interesting tread pattern, because it's almost like fish scales. How I kind of look at it in the center.
Yeah, it's like maybe you could also call it a shark skin.
Yeah.
It's like these step pattern in the middle. So it's not a slick in the middle. I mean, it's a semi-slick tire, but it's not entirely slick in the middle. But you have these little steps, which help a lot, actually, going up really steep roads.
Mm.
I mean, the tire is made for road use as well. So the development started with the G1R, which took over actually this supple casing that I mentioned that we developed for the Pro One. So we took it over to the gravel side as well. So it just took over the technology and saw that it worked really, really great with the G1R. And then, we thought, okay, what would be the next logical step? And made a tire that's even faster. So it's an extremely fast tire that holds up with the road bike tires, you could say. So if you only have one gravel tire or one bike and want to choose one gravel tire, but want to do a lot of road riding as well, this is the perfect tire, because there's nearly no disadvantage in rolling resistance to road bike tire, but you still have a reliable gravel tire that you can ride on most gravel tracks. So for most people, I think it would be the correct choice.
Yeah, I mean, from what I believe, you've still got plenty of grip on the side, almost the top to the side, with the larger, like, I guess, rivets, knobbles that run on the tire. So you've still got plenty of grip on there. And as you say, the main sort of top texture is considerably smoother than maybe what people perceive as a gravel tire when people look at maybe the G1 all round, for example, or the G1 bite as another example. Maybe people look at the bite. It's a very different tire to that. Or even the ultra bite as well. But like I for everything, I think as well, the tan or brownie tan wall, it looks cool. It looks really, really cool. And as we know in cycling, 95% of the most important thing is how it looks.
I mean, we already talked about the disc brake thing.
Yeah, exactly.
I wonder how long these tan walls will stay are here to stay or if the trend will go back to black. At the moment, it's I think in favor of those tan wall colors if you look at the market, but I'm sure we'll go back to black as well. Well, what you described with these intermediate blocks, this is actually something we just took over from our cyclocross tire, the X1 Speed.
Mm.
And we knew these intermediate blocks work really well. They perform really great in muddy conditions as well. So, I mean, Unbound was, it was raining for at least 50 kilometers straight, but like not raining a bit, but like
really raining.
It rained so hard that they really got stuck in the mud.
Yeah.
And actually the tire performed great. So since there's no top pattern, it's nearly smooth on top, it didn't collect a lot of mud.
Mm.
But these outer knobs, they perform great to like shuffle you forward. That was something that we learned from this tire. Of course, if you look more to something like a G1R, which is more like an all-around tread pattern, if you ride a lot off-road, this is something you will be looking for. But for those races where you really, yeah, want to have the maximum speed, the G1RS is the option to have with you then. So
I was really impressed. I'd used the G1R for I probably did about 1,000 kilometers on it. And to be honest, I didn't even think that was much slower on the road, if I'm being completely honest. I thought it rolled fantastically. Like I was going out on group rides and I'd ride on the Aspero just because it was the bike that was in front of me and downstairs.
Yeah.
Normally last minute, running late, grab the first bike available. And I have downstairs, I have a gravel bike and a mountain bike, because they're the ones that get really dirty. And in my house, upstairs, I have a bike room, which basically has the road bikes in it. And 9 times out of 10, I end up grabbing the gravel bike because I just like riding it. I think it's fun. So versatile, being able to jump between, you know, a towpath, fire tracks, gravel trails, mountain bike trails, even to an extent, like you just kind of do everything on it. But yeah, the G1R is really, really impressed with that one. And it grips well, really well for a tire that's similarly, I wouldn't say that the tread in it is like what you'd say, like a proper mountain bike tread or anything, but it still grips fantastically well. Yeah.
Yeah. It's also due to the supple carcass actually. So we worked it out that for the G1R, when we developed that tire, we could go with a little bit of less tread thickness, or what's the word? Like basically, we could cut down the knobs a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Since the tire is so flexible and will adjust to all these different surfaces so well, that you don't need like proper like ultra bite knobs to still perform well in those conditions. Of course, an ultra bite is like the choice if it gets really rocky. You need you just need more stability of the tread in those situations. But like for all-round purposes, the G1R is pretty unbeatable. And now we have an option for people looking for an even faster tire. So we're like, the measurements are like between 16-17%. Depends on where you look at, which speeds you're looking at, basically. But for those racing situations, it makes a big difference to have the G1 RS. If this circumstances allow it. But we had some riders at Unbound who said like, nah, I will just go with the safe choice, I will have the G1 R. I don't know what will happen if maybe it gets too muddy, I will need more tread on the tire. So some choice for that, but most went with the RS. So
the other thing I wanted to bring up, and I think it's very important to bring up, is the Cancellara tires.
Well, we knocked it out of the park with that one, right?
I love them.
Well, I don't know if your listeners or viewers know what that tire is, but it's basically a completely wide Pro One.
Yeah.
Like tread and sidewall are wide. And it has the distinct colors on the side. So you have like the yellow for the Tour de France jersey.
Yeah.
You have This is on there. There's the blue on it for his wins at Flanders. And there's the red, which resembles,
because he's,
I
Swiss.
Think, the other Grand Tours.
I think it's because,
oh yeah, Swiss still. Champion. So I don't know.
A ton of little details of color running down it, and in the Schwalbe logo as well. Otherwise, it's a completely white tire.
Yeah, basically the unique selling point, it's white. So this is why people like are discussing on the internet. Some people love it. Some people hate it.
How has it gone down for from your side? How, what's been the general response? Has it been positive?
Yeah, it's been fairly positive. So the Tudor Cycling Team, so before it was called Swiss Cycling Academy, but now they rebranded it to Tudor. They had the riders on that tire even for the under 23 Flanders edition. They rode it in racing, so they're very happy with the performance. Of course, if you, so the tire can only be white because you take out the carbon from it, so the carbon black from it. So the carbon black is either responsible for grip or for durability. So if you take that out of the equation, it's very hard to come up with a compound that still has a lot of grip and durability. But we now have the technologies to do that. And so we thought, yeah, why not do this fun project with Fabian to show off the collaboration with him, but also to show off that we have the technologies to do these things. And yeah, the response was like so, like the hardcore traditional road cyclist is like, no, I'm not buying that. And then a lot of people love it. And yeah, we got responses that was what we were looking for. So we were looking for a discussion, and this is actually exactly what we got. So
it's perfect, isn't it?
I mean, fun project.
I have those tires on my, I've got a Cervelo S5, which I, it used to be a team Sunweb bike. Sunweb was sponsored by Cervelo, and I don't like the color red. I'm really funny about the color red, and it's quite pathetic, but I just find it aggressive.
You mentioned it before already with your with your Specialized, huh?
Exactly. And so
I have to mention that I just ordered a custom frame, which would be red.
Everyone says red is the fastest color, but
it is.
It's just, I don't know. It is a very specific tone of red that I don't like. And it's like, or do I have a card in my wallet that is that kind of color? Yeah, that red. Like proper post box red, if that makes sense.
It's brighter than Ferrari red.
Yeah, Royal Mail red, that red.
Royal Mail, yeah, we don't have that in Germany, but.
Yeah.
People will know.
People will know that red. It's a very bright red. It is kind of Ferrari red, like really aggressive red, tomato ketchup red, you know. I don't like it because I think it's quite an aggressive color. I had this Sunweb S5, and I got it repainted. My mate's paint studio down in the southeast called Gun Control. We sort of collaborate on a few different projects together, and we raffle off a bike at the end of every year. And I was like, can we actually paint a bike for me? Because I would like to paint this bike not red. So I gave them the frame, and they stripped it back, and we painted it. It's a mix of Cadbury's purple and Lamborghini purple. It's a really nice purple. And then the logos on it are white with like a pearlescent kind of like fleck in them. It's got white tires on it. It's got white tires, white handlebar tape. The only thing it hasn't got is a white saddle. It needs a white saddle. And
okay. Yeah, if you have white handlebar tape, you need a white saddle. That's the rule. I mean,
it's the rule, isn't it?
You know the rules.
Yeah, exactly. Several people have messaged me that saying, oh, you're breaking the rules, not with the tires, but because I've got a black saddle on it. And I was like, okay, fine. But the tires, like, they look super smart on that bike, and same thing, they cause a conversation. And I think that's a fantastic thing to do in, you know, as you know, with cycling is quite introverted, and people are maybe not so flamboyant in certain things, and to have this, you know, to produce these white tires that are really white is really cool. Really cool. It's nice and different. And then the other thing as well that I thought I'd like to bring up as well, which I thought was really interesting when I did Badlands, and I think it probably maybe relates more the mountain bike range of tires that Schwalbe make, which is a massive range of tires. And they're fantastic, very, very respected mountain bike tires. You know, we've seen them winning all kinds of downhill mountain bike races all over the world. And yeah, it's really cool. But when I did Badlands, the recommendation was to ride two different tires. The recommendation was an ultra bite on the front and a bite on the back, which I had never thought of doing on a road bike.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah.
The argument was
the recommendation came from us, or
from the UK side. Yeah.
Okay.
And the recommendation based on the fact that the that's quite a rough off-road race at points. It's gravel, but I was going for the comfort thing more than anything, and just not necessarily trying to race it as quick as I could, but just to finish, because I'd just come off quite a bad injury. And the thought process was more grip on the front to get up some of the steep stuff, and less grip on the back because there's already a load of weight on the back and it gives you a bit less rolling resistance. And that setup was perfect. I couldn't have faulted it. I had no issues during the race with that setup, wheels and tires. It just worked. Didn't have to think about it. I was really, really impressed. But I'd never thought about it in a gravel cycling context. While in a mountain biking, it's quite normal. Seems quite normal.
In the mountain biking world, it's entirely normal. People do it all the time, having a more aggressive tread pattern on the front. In the mountain bike world, even the compounds then change. So you will have a softer compound in the front, a better rolling compound in the back, even for more durability. I think given the smaller size, well, smaller widths of gravel tires, I think that's not needed. Mm. But going for different tread patterns actually makes sense. And when we came up with the RS, it was actually always in the design process to be matching to the G1R. So you can have a grippy tire in the front, fast rolling in the back. So there's always something we think about. And so we give out these recommendations for the tire combinations quite often. You can combine for example, something that works is having G1 all around in the back, G1 bite in the front. But if it goes to more muddy conditions or rougher rocky conditions, then of course you will scale up until the ultra bite. And actually works quite well. I don't use it that much myself. If I go on a bikepacking trip, I have the ultra bite with me as well, but I will put it on the back just to be sure that I will be able to climb all those deep rocky things as well. So, but I don't train as much anymore, so I don't want my tire to slip in the back. I just want to have maximum efficiency in those steep hills, so I don't have to walk. My colleague does it a lot.
Now, I'll quickly cover it as well. That the Schwalbe range is massive in terms of you've got a road, mountain biking, gravel. I guess like touring and city as well. Like there's such a range most of tires.
Important of them all, yeah. If you look at our sales, it's like touring tires are like very, very important to us. But if you look at how many people work on each product, it's basically the same amount of people for mountain biking and the division road and gravel. And then, so basically the drop bar division, and then you have the touring side. So we split that pretty equally.
Well, I guess, as you said, the marathon is the tire that people would go to. Like,
sure.
It's the one.
It's bread and butter for us. Like, it's the most important tire, but still like we are able to do so much more, and this is what we can show in these more sporty segments with mountain biking and road gravel, and yeah, this is where we can show off all our expertise. And in the end, all these technologies, they just get mixed up. Then now we have a I can say it since it will be released in the same day. We have a touring tire that makes use of this supple carcass for the Pro One as well. So we developed it for the Pro One. We have the tires now, the mountain bike and the gravel world, also for touring tires with the same technology. So we always like switch over technologies wherever it's needed. So that's what makes the company so great.
And this is the Overland tire, which is launching at Eurobike.
No. We have a touring, really a touring tire, the Marathon Efficiency that comes out today, if you stream it today. And at the same time at Eurobike Show, we will show off a new gravel tire that you already know about. it's a G1 Overland.
Yeah.
And it's the seventh tread pattern in our gravel lineup. So it's a bit crazy, but we saw the demand for such a tire. And we always took gravel seriously. So we started with development very early on, have a dedicated gravel tire since 2015. Yeah. And now it's the seventh tire, which people might think, yeah, why do we need seven tires? But it's a bike packing tire, but also it's great for commuting and e-gravel bikes. So the main focus was to have a tire that is more durable.
Hmm.
Not necessarily to have a tire, something like the Ultra Bite, which you would also use for bikepacking, but maybe something more like a week long. But if you're now touring for more or longer times, you will need a tire that just has a lot of durability and doesn't wear down as quickly. And also if you run a gravel bike with a very powerful motor, so you see bikes that are paired with a Bosch CX motor, those are really powerful. And then you have a powerful rider who rides aggressively with that bike, he will wear down tires very quickly. So this was the main focus, to add a tire that is more dedicated to these touring situations or situations where you need more durability.
It's great that the range in total for Schwalbe is so diverse. There's so many options out there. And, you know, saying, as you say, seven different gravel tires is, I don't think another brand has done anything close to that. I think that I can think of off the top of my head, maybe they've got two or three.
Well, there are some brands who have a lot of tread patterns as well. The unique thing about Schwalbe is that we offer those tread patterns in a lot of sizes as well, which makes for a huge range huge portfolio of tires in the end. But we think it's worth it, and we're a brand that's entirely focused on cycling products, cycling tires, and we don't have any like motor sports tires and everything. We just focus on this and try to offer the perfect tire for every rider. That's basically the thing we want to do. So for us, it made sense to come up with this tire. There was no discussion about it.
Mm. Yeah. And then on a similar level of talking about development of products, there's a very cool inner tube. It's hilarious to say inner tube is cool, but it is a cool inner tube.
You mean the Aerithon tube? it's a very unique product. It solves issues for riders who don't want to run tubeless. I mean, tubeless is still scary to a lot of people, the setup, the initial setup, but also having maybe a puncture that is not repairable by a dyno plug. You will have those issues if you run really high pressures, for example, on the roadside. So the dyno plug could, shoot out of the tire again. And people, especially on the European market, on the American market, it's not really an issue. People are very happy with their tubeless tires. But it seems like not everyone wants to run tubeless. And for us, I mean, like I said, we want to have the perfect tire or the perfect system for every rider. And so we focused on the development of this inner tube, which gives you most advantages of a tubeless setup. But with a traditional tube setup, basically.
But
this, this was the development goal.
Yeah, it is a super lightweight tube. It's weirdly, it's hard to explain unless someone's actually seen it, but it is effectively like almost a clear plastic as well. And the texture.
It's called thermoplastic polyurethane. So it is a plastic. This kind of plastic is used in the industry for different purposes, mostly insulation. There were some kind of use cases for it before. You also see competitors which are also using the same idea to have these plastic material for a tube. We have a very different kind of raw material than our competitors. So for us, the main goal was to have a really reliable tube. So I use it a lot actually also in gravel. That's because I swap around tires a lot. I test ride a lot, and I do it very quickly also at home from my home office. And it's really quick to change tires with a tube. There's no denying of that. So I use it a lot, and I run very low pressures, and I might even hit the rim a few times, but the Aerothin tube doesn't pinch flat. It's amazing what it can do. So this is a unique selling point of that material. So we didn't put a focus on weight only. There are even lighter options out there, but for us it was important to have the same rolling resistance as tubeless. We achieved that. I mean, latex tubes achieve that as well, but they will pinch flat if you look at them. Have a really reliable tube as well, having this pinch flat resistance. It has also great riding characteristics. It's similar to tubeless. It feels a little bit stiffer maybe. So the rebound is different. If you run it in mountain bike tires, you will feel it a lot. Like mountain bikers are very used to rebound of their tire and they have a lot of experience with tubeless. So this is where we could get a lot of feedback. So riding characteristics are great. The only disadvantage is if you have a normal flat, like get a thorn in your tire, you will have no tubeless sealant in your tube, of course, which cannot seal the little hole right away. So basically, it's on the same level as tubeless. It's maybe a little bit easier to set up. It will take less time if you're used to mounting tubes. But the disadvantage is then you don't have sealant in your tire. But other than that, it's like very on par with the tubeless setup, which is really great. And you mentioned being lightweight, yet compared to normal butyl tubes, it's insanely light. It's basically half the weight. And so there's really the perfect option for people who don't want to use tubeless setups.
I always have one in my rear, like saddle pack, because they're so small. I don't like saddle packs that are really big, and because they're so small, it just doesn't take up much room. Super lightweight, and that's like the emergency inner tube if I need it. You know, if something really does go wrong, I've got an emergency tube there just in case. But they, you know, they roll up so tiny, and they come pre-rolled and they're already tiny. So it's like perfect to just slot into your tool roll or saddle pack, whatever you're using to hold your tools and stuff on your bike. And they, because so many often you think of the traditional inner tube, they are quite big and bulky, really. So I think I personally think they're a great option to have as your spare one. And as you say, if you're changing tires loads, it's fantastically easy in that sense. I've got them, my TT bike, I have them at the moment in my what wheels are they in? They're in one of the sets of wheels that I've got for the TT bike, and it's purely a basis of I haven't done many TTs recently and I can't be asked to keep maintaining a tubeless setup. So I just put one of those in it, and the rolling resistance, as you say, is great. The rolling resistance is super low. It's very similar to running tubeless anyway. And if you puncture in a time trial, to be honest, that's your time trial over anyway.
Time trial's over anyway. Yeah, that's a great use case as well. If you have bikes that are maybe a little bit older and you want to boost their performance to the level of tubeless, but the rims don't allow it. Or you might still have like, very old wheels, or maybe, I don't know, there's some reasons why you don't want to go tubeless. This is the perfect option to just, have basically the same properties as tubeless. I mentioned one disadvantage, but other than that, there are a lot of use cases for it. And we're in the market now with this product for, I think, 1.5 years, maybe a little bit longer. I think we launched mid of 2020. It's going great. I mean, the demand is very high for the product, so
we're
lucky with that.
And I guess we talked about it a bit, but and I think both you and I, maybe we're singing from the same hymn, but we both do think that tubeless is probably, it's such a thing that I find it so funny how so many people are very anti it. But I think both of us probably are singing from the same hymn and saying that it is really is the way to go if you're using, if you're, you've got the rims that will work for it. What would be your reasons for saying to someone to give tubeless a setup, a try?
Well, it's much easier than you think. There are great tutorials out there on how to do it. I can understand people who are not like into handling the sealant, but there are like easy tricks to go around it, to have it set up really easy. Most of it is described on our web page as well. So have a look at those tutorials there. You'll see that it's really easy. I think the greatest thing about tubeless is that you have to differentiate with what you're riding, but for gravel, it would be you're able to run really low pressures. That gives you a lot of comfort, but a lot of grip as well. On a single trail, for example, you will be able to go to places where you won't be able to go otherwise, because, you will just pinch flat all the time. So it offers a lot more performance on the gravel side as well. On the road side, it will decrease the rolling resistance a lot. It will increase comfort, but it will not make like a world of a difference. You will be much faster, and for a pro rider or anyone who's looking for performance, it's the way to go. But at gravel, I would say it's like the only setup you should run. It's the only option, basically. I see so many people riding like very high pressures, not being able to basically ride downhill on those pressures. It's just straight away dangerous. What I've seen, like also my friends group, I had to do a lot of convincing since most of them came from the roadside. So I was a roadie before, and so a lot of my friends are as well. And they were running pressures of 3.5 bar or more. And I was like, of course, you're not able to go this single trail with this much pressure on your tires. On a gravel bike, you don't have suspension. The only suspension that you've got is your tire. And if you're not able to go really low on pressure because you pinch flat all the time with a normal butyl tube, it's straight away impossible to ride a lot of things that are very fun with a tubeless setup, but very dangerous with different setups that are just very high pressures. So
what would you what pressure would you ride on if you set up tubeless on your gravel bike?
I'm quite heavy, and it also depends on what rim width you have. So the wider the rim, the more volume your whole system will have. So basically, because the rim adds to the circumference of your tire.
Yes, of course.
So it will increase the volume in total if you have a very wide rim. I run pressures of about 2 bar, which is very low for my weight. But my suggestion is, if you have a tubeless setup, just start at 2.5 bar. Doesn't matter how what kind of setup you have, and then from there you can find it out. You can go with a little bit lower, so you lower the pressure a little bit, or you go a little bit higher if you feel like the tire is squishy, or like it's not the steering is weird. Then then you will have the point of where it's not enough pressure. But until then, you can just decrease. So this is what I do. Like I just go to the point where it feels weird to steer, and then I go up again, like
add a little bit more,
a tenth of a bar. Yeah, just a little bit more. So this is how I find my pressure. We have a tool. It's called MX Pro. It's very cheap, I think. It's a pressure measuring tool, and with that, you can find out your perfect pressure pretty easily.
We
are also working on a tool for our website. It's we already have it. It's Pressure Prof, so Pressure Professor, for the mountain bikes that we have that. And watch out, we will have it ready for gravel soon.
That's amazing.
And then you will be able to calculate a very nice starting pressure, and from there you can make those adjustments. Of course, if you like pinch that all the time, the pressure was not enough. But this is why you go like start at a medium pressure, something in 2.5 bar, and then go higher or lower depending on how it feels. Like if you have a very narrow rim, 2.5 bar can already steer weird. If you have a very wide rim, you will be able to go below 2 bar. Then depending on tire width as well. So it's very complex. But starting at a middle ground and then working yourself down is usually a pretty good idea.
It's fascinating, isn't it? How, as you say, there's more factors than people think really involved in it, like tire width, rim width, rider weight, condition you're going to ride on as well. There's so many different factors that can affect it. Because I could think like...
Also carcass constructions. I mean, if you take G1R with a very supple carcass in comparison to an ultra bike with a very sturdy carcass, it makes a huge difference even at like same tire widths. There are a lot of factors going in, but also personal preference, of course. I mean, some people just don't feel the bumps as much as others. Maybe your rear stay is more compliant, so you can run higher pressures because like the frame is able to absorb more of those bumps. So there's insane amount of factors going into that.
It's very interesting how though that I think of like friends of mine who have been riding for years and years and years, and they're like, they're talking about going to time trials and, you know, running on 23 mil tires or 20 mil tires or 19 mil tires even, and like putting in 110 PSI or something like that. Like, and it is rock solid. And, you know, in contrast now where people are starting to understand that a tire is so hard, the rolling resistance actually isn't as good as it maybe have been perceived at the time, you know. And same thing, like wider tires is proving to be as fast, lower volume of air in the tire is proving to be as fast, and increased comfort. I think maybe there was this mindset that because it's super hard and it's very rattly, it feels fast, but it actually isn't necessarily any faster at all.
Not necessarily. I mean, it depends a lot on the surface. So if you look, I mean, our rolling resistance drum, for example, is just made of steel. It's completely flat. There are no bumps in it. And so, of course, a higher pressure will result in a better rolling resistance. But if you look at the real world, apart from track riding, and I mean, especially wooden tracks.
Yeah.
If you already look at concrete tracks and you feel the surface, anybody who's crashed on a concrete track will know. It's very rough. It takes off your skin immediately. I mean, that's the worst place to fall down. Yeah. So it's very rough. And basically, if you look at it with a microscope, or you don't even need a microscope, you can just feel it. It's very rough. And the tire needs to be able to adapt to the surface. If it doesn't, if it's pumped up so high, like your whole system will have to elevate each time you hit one of those tiny bumps. And so you will produce a lot of energy that goes upwards instead of the energy that you will need going forward.
Yeah.
So that's basically the theory. So, I mean, there are extreme conditions like Paris-Roubaix, where the riders are now on the pavé. So if you have cobblestones, it's the extremest of those conditions that you can think of for a road bike. And of course, a very low pressure is much faster than a very high pressure on these situations. Because if you have very high pressure, you're just bumping along and you will come to a stop. And but that holds true for normal surfaces as well that you will face in the real world. Like most tarmac situations are very rough. People don't realize that. So it's not really, like, apart from wooden tracks, apart from very smooth surfaces, it's not really ideal to still run those 8 bars, 10 bars. You're much better off with a more realistic 6 to 7 bars for a 25 millimeter tire. And that results in a better rolling resistance, actually, and it increases comfort again. I mean, we've talked about it today a lot.
Do you think
there's a lot of advantages?
So you mentioned Paris-Roubaix there as well, and I'm sorry that we're missing an amazing stage once again. So Canyon-SRAM, they were running the Pro Ones, I believe, at Roubaix. Yes.
Yeah.
In 28th, I think it was on the, I don't know the Canyon bike range, the Air Road. I think they were riding Air Roads as well, which is there.
I think on that stage they rode the Air Road, but the Ultimate.
The Ultimate, yeah.
So they are more all around bike. And if I'm not mistaken, I think they chose for 30 millimeter Pro Ones. On they have zip wheels, which are quite wide. It's a hookless design. And they were very happy with their choice. We had, for example, Uno X, which we sponsor as well. They ran 28 millimeter tires, but only because their frame didn't allow for more. So they would have preferred to run 30 millimeters as well. But they had to run 28 millimeter tires. I think for next year, they're looking for different options as well. But
the gap in between those cobbles is definitely bigger than 28 mils as well at a certain point.
It's pretty brutal.
We're talking 4 or 5 centimeters often in between some of the cobbles, especially if there's a cobble missing, like the Arenberg. It's one of the most iconic and also most disgusting bits of road that I've ever ridden. There's no
I will have to agree on that. Yes. It's very rough. I mean, Paris-Roubaix is very special. It's a very special day, not only for the riders, but also for learning about all the equipment. You will not need 30 millimeter tires in a stage at Alpe d'Huez, where you have fresh tarmac, which they just made happen for that stage. I mean, you see that for the Tour de France, a lot of stages get new tarmac on the road. Just for that one day. So of course, you will not need that wide tire. Only for those special conditions you need it. But I think for the everyday rider, there are huge advantages of using wider tires. I mean, we have the Pro One up to 3-4 millimeters in 2 millimeter increments. So we have a very big size selection, so everyone can choose their perfect widths. And I prefer wide tires as well. I run a 30 in an everyday situation, just for the increased comfort. And I mean, I'm not racing anymore, so I don't need the aerodynamics. I don't necessarily need the lightweight. I'm more interested in grip, comfort, and on a 30 millimeter tire, you're able to ride a little bit of gravel if you need to as well. Like nothing will happen.
Yeah.
Construction is the same as RG1R or RS. There's no issue. Like crossing a wood if you don't want to ride the busy Bundesstraße, like the busy highway.
Yeah.
Just want to escape the traffic a bit and just take a shortcut. It's no issue on a 30 or 32 millimeter tire.
Like, we did, me and one of my friends did a like bike packing trip around Spain in February this year. And lo and behold, there was more gravel in it than I had originally, than I thought I'd planned. And I was on a Cervelo Caledonia 5 running a set of 30 mil. What was I running? 30 mil Pro Ones.
Mm-hmm.
And my mate was on a Scott Foyle aero bike. With, I think he had the clearance. I think he could fit 28s on it. But I'm not sure what the tire was that he was riding. But there was a lot of gravel. And we both of us, like we're on loaded bikes. We're on kind of race bikes, but loaded up with kit and everything. And we were both like riding along, just thinking, this is definitely a good test for these road tires that we're riding right now. Because we were riding like proper rough, really rough stuff. And there's one of the days we had a climb and it ended up being like a mountain climb, basically. And it was 60% off-road, I'd say.
Okay.
Yeah. No issues at all. Both running tubeless.
I mean, I don't want to recommend it too much, you put it that way. I mean, it's still a road bike tire, but if you have to occasionally, it will work. Especially if you run a tubeless setup. You have a lot of advantages in running wider tires, but of course you need a frame that accommodates those tires. You need a wheel set that is tubeless compatible. And if you don't have that, there are options as well. You mentioned the Aerothin tube, and just ride with what you have. It's basically always the thing that I say, you don't want to boost the importance of those technologies too much. I mean, in the end, it's about riding.
Exactly. I have one last question for you. And it goes back to tubeless again. I'm going to hone on about it a bit because I really like it. My last thing I want to ask you is, what would be your tips to someone who has got the appropriate rims, has got some tubeless tires, and wants to set up tubeless on their bike? What would be your tips for someone for the first time setting it up?
Okay, get tires that are known to be set up easily. Don't get tires that where the word is already out that they're hard to set up, that they're leaking or whatever. So maybe choose a tire that is reliable in that regard. Then the first thing I would look for is if the rim tape is the appropriate one, because sometimes you have wheels that say tubeless compatible or tubeless compliant, but the manufacturer will not have the correct tape on it. So if the tape is not tubeless compatible, you will need to replace the tape. This is one of those main issues. And then the setup is fairly easy. Put in the valve, put on the tire, maybe try to pump it up first. I try to pump it up first with a floor pump. That works with most of the setups now. And then put the sealant in. I mean, some people will put the sealant in right away. I will do it as well if I know my system already. But if I do it the first time, I will have to make sure like everything pops into place first and I don't have to deal with the sealant if it doesn't. Mm. It can be quite tricky. And yeah, look for those YouTube tutorials that you find are pretty great. I mean, you will see a step-by-step. Take your time, but it will not take very long. And if your floor pump is not doing the job, you don't need to buy a compressor, but you can buy one of those air cans, basically. We offer one as well. We call it tire booster, where you can pump up like an air can with a lot of pressure, and then you just release the air very rapidly in the tire, and it will get the job done for sure. So,
because that's it at the end of the day, isn't it? Is you need that, as you say, some traditional pumps will actually set up a tubeless tire, no issues, but sometimes that just get of air is what you need, and the air can is a really good shout. I've got one of them and works absolutely fine. It's perfect. It does exactly what it needs to do. But you can also get pumps that have a, I guess, like an air.
They have the same thing, but
exactly
the same basically.
Thing. Yeah.
But like a bad combination would be like a very wide gravel tire, something like a 45 or 50 mil tire, and then trying to pump it up with a high pressure pump, something for the road cycling world. That's sometimes a combination that will not work, just because it will not, the airflow is basically not enough to set it up. Other than that, it works really great now with most of the rim manufacturers, and most bike manufacturers, they're really looking at good combinations of tire and rim, what they have on their bike. Especially if you look at on those higher end models, and there's usually, it's really easy to set up. The only thing is like having to look for the correct rim tape, for example. But I think other than that, it's quite easy actually.
Yeah, I think people seem to be scared of it, and I'm not sure why.
I remember when I did it the first time. So I used to work at a bike shop, and tubeless for us was not really like a standard setup. You would just sell the bike with a butyl tube in it. And you can't, like, the manufacturers would love to sell the bike set up tubeless already, but since they have to travel usually from Asia to Europe and they're standing a lot of time, they fear that the tire will just deflate too quickly, and then the sealant will run out basically. So it's not really feasible for them to set them up tubeless right away. But yeah, we then started to offer that to customers, that we would set their bikes up tubeless. And there was a big demand for it. But the first time I did it, I was like also quite scared, like, what will happen? But in the end, nothing happened. It was just like setting up a tire and then putting sealant in it afterwards and pumping it up again. So
yeah,
not really much to it, especially nowadays. With really nice rim and tire options, it's not really an issue anymore.
I completely agree. And if anyone that's hesitant, Jacob is available to do your tires if you want to in Germany.
You can visit us at a lot of events, and we will help you for sure. So this is something we will do like all day if we visit a trade fair or most of those open air trade fairs where we are at. We will help people set up the tubeless. So just talk to us. We're very happy to help and demonstrate how easy it is.
Yeah, the guys and girls in the UK are fantastic at bringing that support. They really are great for it, and have been my, like, very often when I've had random questions about tire choice, have been very responsive. And you know, I'm very lucky to have been working with Schwalbe now for, God, I don't even know how many years it is now. It might be 4 years. I'm not really sure. It's quite a while. It's a long time. And seeing the development of the range over that period of time has been really, really cool. And now, because I'm starting to get into mountain biking, I've just having my mind blown by something completely different. I'm literally like, which ones? This one.
Yeah. So next time you will have to invite one of my colleagues from the mountain bike segment to your podcast.
And that's where I'm going to have my mind completely blown, because
it's a different world.
It really is, isn't it? One thing I will say about the mountain biking is the names are brilliant for the tires.
Yeah, they are. And somehow we always come up with even better ones. I don't know. I'm amazed how that still works. Like, you would think after a few years you would run out of ideas.
Yeah.
But yeah, like it is very unique to the brand. And people ask me if we want to do it for Gravel as well. I'm like, we run quite good on the G1 branding. Like, it's fairly well known. Everyone knows what the G1 is. So maybe no. But yeah, for the mountain bike world, it works great having those.
I've got a knobby Nick on the front and a Wicked Will on the back on my mountain bike.
Yeah, knobby Nick, Wicked Will.
Great name, great names. Anyway, thank you, Jacob, so much for your time today. And there's, as we sort of mentioned, there's some exciting new tires coming out with Schwalbe, with the Overland that's going to be, well, when this podcast is live, is available now. Go and check it out. Have a look at the G1 RS as well. Like, I've just fitted it to my Aspera 5, so I'm definitely going to be shouting about that while I'm out at the Tour de France, because I'm actually going to get to ride it a bit out there. So it's been really cool. Yeah, Jacob, thank you so much for your time. Have fun watching the Tour de France stage that neither of us have been able to watch.
Yeah, I will watch the replay now. But yeah, thank you so much for the invitation. It was a pleasure talking to you. It was a pleasure getting to meet you now.
Yeah.
We never talked before. Really great getting to know you. And
awesome.
What do you say about the Overland? That's something I want to know, get some feedback from you as well. Once you have it, and I'm excited.